Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, you know, an album that burns its way into our collective memory. And today, we'll be taking a trip back to Bedford-Stuyvesant, the livest one, circa 1994, to revisit Ready to Die, the debut album of the notorious B.I.G. I made it out, I'm bringing mad joy. The doctor looked and said he's gonna be a bad boy. Me all the respect to all the gunman them. Gunman alone keep gunman friends. Fire gun, me all the informer them. Have mercy, alone keep informer friends. Now I'm 13. There's a few rules to this game. Biggie even told us, don't get high on your own supply. Don't mix family and business. Don't offer credit to crackheads. All sensible. But maybe someone should have warned Biggie about another rule. Don't put Patti LaBelle's name in your song, especially if it's about her. As I sit back, relax, steam a blunt, sip a Bex. Think about the sexy singers that I want to sex. I probably go to jail for fucking Patti LaBelle. Ooh, Regina. As is, I think, somewhat famously known, even though it's perhaps a little bit apocryphal, Patti took issue with Mr. Christopher Wallace complaining to the head of her label, MCA Records, which happened to run Uptown Records, the label that Biggie was signed to at the time. Here's DJ Enough, who explained what happened next.
And Patti don't play. Patti got Big kicked off the label. You feel what I'm saying? Or the deal, whatever, because of these lyrics. And I remember us being on the road, and there was this purple tour bus. And then I think it was L, and he says, yo, Big, look at your girl. And it was, and sure enough, we look, it's Patti LaBelle. So this, I'm a big enough, it's like, we want no problems with her.
In reality, it's probably a little bit more complicated than that, especially as Sean Puffy Combs was on the outs with Uptown's management at the time. And when Puff left to form Bad Boy, he negotiated Biggie's release as well. Either way, whether it was Puffy's label issues or Biggie pissing off Miss Patti LaBelle, the move to Bad Boy would change the legacies of both rapper and manager, as 2 years later, Biggie's Ready to Die would be part of the paradigm shift that would change hip-hop forever. You could call it the greatest debut album, the greatest album out of Brooklyn, the greatest album of 1994, or just the greatest album ever. The very fact that Ready to Die is in every single one of those conversations is telling enough. We'll get much deeper into just what made this album an all-time heat rock, but it's enough to say that across an hour and change, Biggie managed to flash so many sides of his personality that you would have thought half a dozen artists recorded it, with how he balanced salacious humor and suicidal darkness, marijuana-laced paranoia and champagne-sipped dreams, the shiniest of pop gems and the grimiest of street anthems. It's a great listen still. It's a tough listen still, especially thinking back on how Biggie was only 24 when he died here in LA 24 years ago this spring. But through all those mixed emotions, one thing remains true. Biggie Smalls was the illest.
Ready to Die was the album pick of our guest today, bassist, producer, and recording artist, Patrick Page. I'm from LA, as everyone knows, and I'm so proud of my city, as everyone knows. Proud of a long list of things, but at the top of that list is my pride in the sound of LA, the music, the scene, the culture, our tendency to collaborate, to hybridize genres, to architect movements and vibes, to be progressively cool, our sonic landscape that knows no stranger when it comes to music. Patrick Page is part of the Renaissance, that beautiful Renaissance of sound here in LA. Both as part of the internet and on his own solo projects, he represents the A-level of talent native to the best coast, native to LA. His musicianship and production are so stellar, y'all. He's a poet and a bass god. It's worth it to spend time with Letters of Irrelevance so you'll know what I mean. So glad to have him here with us to talk music. Patrick Page, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you, first of fucking all. That was a fantastic intro. That was crazy.
Glad to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. And if audience members are wondering what they're hearing in the background, it's because I think you are the first ever guest that we've had on that is taping inside of their car, and not just that, but at the beach. So that's awesome. What we want to know first, though, is because this is the first time we've gotten into a conversation, strangely, about Biggie Smalls, what was your introduction to the Notorious B.I.G.? And specifically also your introduction to Ready to Die.
My first introduction to Biggie Smalls was probably the radio. It was either like Biggie Give Me One More Chance, or it was like More Money, More Problems, you know, the radio hits. Or it was probably Big Papa. I think it was probably Big Papa. That one was the one that goddamn, that sample was crazy. That Isley Brothers sample. And then my first introduction to the album Ready to Die was my geometry teacher, Mr. Van, actually, in 11th grade. He gave me pretty much every year. He used to play the best music just I've ever heard. Like, a lot of my music taste, honestly, the way I approach music and what I listen to and listen for, like, a lot of that, you know, is rooted and stems from him. Like, my love for the boom bap ass hip hop and shit like that. I mean, I've always loved that, but Mr. Van, like, put me on to, like, all that shit. So, yeah. Shout out to Mr. Van. I still talk to him to this day.
That's awesome. What high school is this?
Community Harvest Charter School.
That is the hippest math teacher I've ever heard of.
Yeah, no, he's the best. He was the best math teacher. Like, he was like the coolest math teacher, I'd definitely say. Like, he used to walk around class with like different toy swords and shit. It was dope. Like, he loved swords and like, it was cool. His after school hours and shit, like, he used to like play dope ass music, like, just all throughout class. He wasn't playing no trash, man. You know what I'm saying? It was like all very lyrical. It was like very jazzy. It was very chords. It was like some dope ass soul, some R&B. So yeah, he's the one who like handed me these albums. Like, he gave me my first Tribe Called Quest album. He gave me Illmatic. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, like, he gave me like all these albums, like all that. So.
So I'm curious, was he in his 30s or 40s at this point? Like, was he a young teacher?
Yeah, Mr. Van's pretty young. I'm gonna say 30s for sure.
Okay.
Pretty young dude. So. Yeah, because he's not old now. Still looks a good looking guy. You see, it's kind of like the crack did the Pookie and New Jack, except when I cross over, it ain't no coming back. Should I die on the train track like Rainbow and Beach Street? People at the funeral front and like they miss me. My baby mama kissed me, but she glad I'm gone. She know me and her sister had something going on.
My introduction to Biggie was 1992. And that's the What's the 411 remix and what I like to call the 20 Seconds of Fame. Sex, I'm taking no losses. Even groups like SWV and TLC. Jesse B.I.G. with telepathy. The recipe, a picture hardcore with the gun. Dipping ain't easy, but the show is fun. When it comes to nuts, I bust them one by one. So what's the 411? Yo, what's the 411? That had to have been crazy, like, actually hearing Biggie Smalls come out at the time when Biggie Smalls came out, like, in the 90s in college. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, listening to Biggie Smalls in high school, I'm like 14, 15 years old in 2005, 2006, like digesting this years later after this has already like made its mark. You know what I'm saying? So like being there for that, for this time period, that had to have been fucking crazy. Like,
I'll say this much, because my introduction to Biggie also came around 92 with all of the features that he was doing on mostly a lot of, to Morgan's point, a lot of Uptown stuff, Mary J. Blige's stuff. So the Real Love remix, the What's the 411 remix that we've talked about, the remix, the Super Cats, Dolly My Baby. So what you say, what you say? I love it when you call me Big Papa, the showstopper, the rhyme dropper, Super Cat past the clock. I see you shivering. Check the flavor, Biggie Smalls is delivering. Lyrical lyrics, flowing lyrics out my larynx. Chubby competitor, quick to kick. And so Biggie was killing it on the cameo front, which makes it all the more ironic that when his actual debut single came out on Uptown, Party and Bullshit, I thought it was just kind of so-so. It don't take nothing but front for me to start something. Bugging and bucking at niggas like I was duck hunting. Coming out just me and my crew, because all we want to do is bullshit. So going into his transition to Bad Boy, I didn't really have a really well-formed opinion of him yet because I wasn't really sure which Biggie we were going to get. And I got to be really honest that when Juicy dropped, it really wasn't my thing. I just didn't like the sound of it. And, you know, famously, Biggie was really skeptical about it as well. But Puffy convinced him, like, this is going to be a huge hit. And as I think as history has showed, if Puffy thinks something's going to be a big hit, he's usually pretty right. But it was the flip side to Juicy that had me sold, which was, of course, Unbelievable, pairing Biggie and Primo. And that was just fire. I'm like, all right, let's hear what comes next. Crutches, get smoked like Dutches from the master. Hate to blast you, but I have to. You see, I smoke a lot. Your life is played out like Farme and the fucking polka dots. Who rock the spot? Biggie, you know how the weed go. Unbelievable. So, Patrick, what makes that album a heat rock for you?
Well, first of all, I have to just be completely honest. I'm not too familiar with Biggie's feature verses. So what I'm about to do now is go do my homework, because now I've been inspired. Number one, because he's like top three rappers for me, like ever. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Biggie Smalls, yeah. Five Dog, Big L. That's the Holy Trinity for me. Mm. So, yeah, like even being from L.A., from the West Side, like my favorite rappers are from the East. That's like, yeah. You know, it's kind of where it like started. Like, I love my West Side rappers, don't get me wrong. But anyway, I digress. What makes Ready to Die a heat rock for me is literally everything. Just, sonically, it's a fantastic album. The production, the arrangement, it was the aggression, it was the wordplay, it was the metaphors. That's why it was a heat rock for me. Is my mind playing tricks like Scarface and Bushwick? Willie D having nightmares of girls killing me. She mad because what we had didn't last. I'm glad because her cousin let me hit the ass. Fuck the past, let's dwell on the 500 SL, the E&J and ginger ale. The way my pockets swell to the rim with Benjamins.
For me, I think, and I'm going to paint with a very broad brush here, but I feel like before Ready to Die, it felt like most hip-hop albums were either aimed for just straight up mainstream radio play, or at least that was the ambition, or they were destined for underground mix shows. But it's really hard to me to find a lot of examples with albums that organically fit into both spaces without feeling like it was forcing something in one direction or another that just didn't feel quote unquote authentic. And I think obviously The Chronic pulled it off, though to me, I feel like that might have been a little bit more by accident than intention. But it was really clear with Ready to Die that Puffy had a very grand vision for how Biggie could walk both paths, which is how you end up with an album that on the one hand could give us a song like Juicy or a song like Big Papa, like Patrick was mentioning earlier. And then on the other hand, you have songs that are profoundly radio unfriendly.
Like Give Me the Loot.
Give Me the Loot. Exactly. My pockets looking kind of tight and I'm stressed. Yo, Biggie, let me get the vest. No need for that. Just grab the fucking gat. The first pocket that's fat, the tech is to his back. Word is born, I'ma smoke him. Yo, don't fake no moves. What? Treat it like boxing. Stick and move. Stick and Nigga, move. You ain't got to explain shit. I think after this album, every ambitious rapper out there wanted to find that same balance. And with no offense to Jay-Z, if we're talking about the blueprint, I think Biggie and Puff built it with Ready to Die.
That's a good point you bring up there.
Morgan, how about you? What makes Ready to Die heat rock for you?
Well, I have to talk about 1994 and hip hop. And just to say that I love so much of what came out that year, and I'm still bumping most of what came out that year. Illmatic, Southern Playalistic, Cadillac Music. You got J.Ru, The Sun Also Rises. One of my favorites was Boogie Monsters, Rider on the Storm. You got the Fugees, Blunted on Reality. You got Warren G, Regulate. So there was so much that was good that year. But the fact that I kept going back to Ready to Die says something about the quality of that album. But also, too, I think if what makes Ready to Die a heat rock above anything else is Biggie himself.
Yeah,
I can talk about the productions on the other album. I can talk about Premiere. I can talk about, you know, everybody else on here. But what makes Ready to Die a standout is Biggie. To me, more than anything else, it's his stories and his bars. This is an album that I wish was a visual album because it feels very much like Hype Williams videos. It feels like Belly. I mean, Warning by itself is a short film.
Who the fuck is this? paging me at 5:46 in the morning. Crack of dawning, now I'm yawning. Wipe the cold out my eye. See who's this paging me and why. It's my nigga Pop from the barbershop. Told me he was in the gambling spot and heard the intricate plot. A nigga's wanna see.
There's just, I mean, to me, he's my favorite because of his charisma and because he was clever and because of his bars. That's it. And that's what sets this apart. It could have been on, you know, a bunch of different beats. The beats are great. The production's great. But for me, what makes it a Heat Rock is Biggie.
I gotta agree. I gotta agree.
Damn. Niggas wanna stick me for my paper. They heard about the Rolexes and the Lexus with the Texas license plates out of state. They heard about the pounds you got down in Georgetown, and they heard you got half Virginia locked down.
We'll ask you about your favorite song later on, but what's your favorite narrative on there? What's your favorite thing that Biggie's talking about, his narration?
Ooh.
Good question.
That's a great question. I guess the very first song, and the thing is, the very first song where he's talking about, where he's introducing you to Brooklyn, where he's like, damn, shit done changed. He's like, he's basically walking you through the streets.
Yeah.
Like, there's the junkies over there, there's the dope boys over there, you gonna get robbed over here. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's probably one of my favorite narratives. It's like, literally walks you through where he's at in Bed-Stuy. Like, that's probably one of my favorites.
For the stupid motherfuckers wanna try to use Kung Fu. Instead of a Mac-10, he tried scrapping. Slugs in his back end, that's what the fuck happens when you sleep on the street. Little motherfuckers with heat wanna leave a nigga 6 feet deep. And we come into the way to make sure the crying and commotion ain't a motherfucking fake.
Morgan, how about you? What's your favorite story on this album?
Well, real quick, and maybe Christian can drop this in later, is I love what Shock G had to say about Biggie's flow.
Biggie is a swinger. He swings like a horn player over jazz. B-I-G-P-O-P-P-A, no info for the D-E-A. He put more emphasis on the He's just spelling his name. But the flow, vicious.
My favorite story, I mean, I go back and forth between Respect and Juicy. Mm-hmm. I think they're two sides of the same coin. Juicy is a cleaned up version. It's the story that you have to repeat when the press is around. And Respect is what you tell to your friends when you can curse and say everything else. I love the humor of how he starts Respect about talking about how he was born. I mean, it's just such an animated and interesting way to talk about his delivery and his mom. I like Juicy because it's rags to riches. And I think everyone can relate to the level of hustle. The video looks like the lifestyles of rich and famous. It's this gigantic mansion. Diddy's in a pool. It's like, it's just so like aspirational. And I love how he humanizes his experience and makes it seem like, listen, I wanted to be here. This is what it took to be here. And here I am. You know, I love how he talks about him in elementary school. One of the things that's the most lovable about Biggie is he was self-deprecating, that he was like, yo, I'm not a model. I'm your basic dude that was doing this on the block. I made it. And here I am. I'm gonna. He's such a realist. And so that's my favorite story. And I mean, you can't beat an M2MA sample. What are you going to do? I mean, you could be talking about Plato on there. If you use that sample, it's fantastic. So that's my favorite story. The way he tells rags to riches, I think, is really beautiful on that.
Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Piece to Raw G, Brucey B, Kid Capri. Funk, Master Flex, Love, Bug, Star, Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would.
Even the Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, like when I was dead broke, I couldn't picture this.
Yes.
Like 50, like. That was like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, wow. I mean, you know, I'm a little older now. I mean, like, not older, but that was a little before me. But, you know, me playing my Xbox, I'm like, yeah. Like, being able to relate to my Nintendo Switch. Like, yeah, man, now I have a Switch. This is dope as fuck. Like,
right.
Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this. 50-inch screen, money green, leather sofa. Got two rides, a limousine with the chauffeur. Phone bill about 2 G's flat. No need to worry, my accountant handles that.
Yeah, we all want that. We all want the Juicy story, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to talk more about Juicy in the second half, because that certainly is one of my favorite story songs on the album. I've said this before in the show. I just love a really good autobiographical song. and Juicy absolutely is top tier for that. Mm. So if I'm not going to talk about that, I would probably go with, I mean, Warning is great, and we just talked about it a moment ago in terms of just kind of laying out this whole story from beginning to end. I probably would give the nod, though, to Gimme the Loot. Mm. Partly because, you know, it is a story about like these two people out there robbing folks, right? And the fact that it's Biggie both ways, and they're just pitch shifting his voice so he sounds like a different person. Yeah. And I just love it when you have these kind of studio tricks to create a different dynamic for the listener. And to be honest, I think the first time I heard Ready to Die, or the first, you know, X amount of times I listened to Gimme the Loot, I probably thought it was actually a different MC, and I was probably looking at the liner notes trying to figure out like who the hell this cameo is. And then I realized later, it's like, oh no, that's just Biggie. They just pitch shifted his voice, though he sounded different. One in the chamber, 32 in the clip. Motherfuckers better strip. Yeah, nigga, peel. Before you find out how blue steel feel. From the Beretta, putting all the holes in your sweater. The money getter, motherfuckers know the better. Rolex watches, the colorful swatches. I'm digging in pockets, motherfuckers can't stop it. I'm wondering, for each of you, what is it about Biggie that in just the relatively short amount of time that he had to record, I mean, he really only had about 5 years of recordings. What is it about him as an MC that you think has helped to catapult him into that constant conversation about being one of the greatest MCs ever?
You know, it's so funny. I'd be wondering this too about Big L, to keep it real with you, because Big L also only had like two albums and then
right.
some other random songs, but still, yeah. like his bars still stood the test of time. I think that's what it is. His flow was so unique. It was so powerful and it stood the test of time. Not just that, he'd like you made a really good point when you said he had a very radio friendly album, but then he has some shit for like the street dudes, you know, at the right. same time. So,
yeah.
And like both sides had classics. You know what I'm saying? Like classics that to this day we're still playing More Money, More Problems at the club. If you feel like right. you just got your paycheck, you know what I'm saying? You still playing Gimme the Loot. If you upset, you drive down the street, you late for work. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like this is like these songs are standing the test of time. You know what I'm saying? Like these flows are so unique and we've not heard this before. We've not seen it again.
Yeah.
Who knows if we ever will again? You know what right. I'm saying?
It's his bars. I mean, considering the things that I said about the 90s, and one thing about being in college in the 90s where there were all these ciphers, and going to an HBCU, you could walk down any block into any class and dudes were standing in the corner and you really, really had to have lyrics then. You really, really had to. And there were great rappers out there. But the fact that I can remember most, if not all, of these Biggie songs doesn't say a lot about me. It just says a lot about him. It wasn't just his delivery. He packed a lot in. He's great with the metaphors. All the criterion that we set for great bars. Great with the metaphors. Great with the stories. He was clever. He's funny. His cadence. All that stuff. And considering that Ready to Die was supposed to be called Teflon Don, and it was made into sort of a more conceptual album, he introduced us in the same way I think Nas introduced us to Queensbridge. Biggie gave us Bed-Stuy Brooklyn, and he gave us these stories. And he had the two companion albums, Ready to Die and Life After Death. They're just, to me, they're just a thing of beauty on both ends. We got radio hits. We got big hits. Big Papa, Juicy, Ready to Die. We have Going Back to Cali. I mean, if you never heard anything else from Biggie, and all you ever heard was 10 Crack Commandments.
Oh my gosh, I love that one.
That's a storyteller. And I'll tell you this, just a short story. When Biggie passed, that weekend after, my brother was having a party in the Bay Area. So he picked us up from the airport and he was like, he had gotten a convertible. It was sort of a bucket, but it was a convertible. And we were like, oh, this is cool. This is pimping. So we got in and it started raining. And I was like, this is not cool, but I'm still going to roll with you. We probably rapped Biggie songs from the time we got in the car to the time we got to his front door. And it was a little bit of a climb. I mean, word for word, there was like five of us in the car, all LA folks, all West Coasters. And we knew every word. And it was just a moment where we wanted to pay honor to Biggie because it was such a loss, but a recognition of, look how many songs we know by this dude. And for me, as a kid that you know, was in college in the 90s, like I said, there were so many talented rappers. Biggie always, to me, is the best in class for all those things that I mentioned. I'm doing rhymes now, fuck the crimes now, come on the app, I'm real hard to find now, cause I'm knee deep in the beat, in the Land Cruiser Jeep with the Mac-10 by the seats, for the jackers, the jealous ass crackers in the... I make you prove that it's bulletproof.
We've been talking so much about Biggie as an MC, but I do want to give ample credit to the quality of the production on here, and especially the team of producers that I'm assuming Puffy brought together. That included Easy Mo B, the Blues Brothers, Poke, Chucky Thompson, and then you had these one-offs from Lord Furness, who I think at the time I was really surprised to see him doing Suicidal Thoughts, just to see like Furness doing production for somebody else at the time. Darnell Scott, who did Things Done Changed. And of course, DJ Premier, like I mentioned earlier. What works so well about so much of the production on this album is how cinematic a lot of it feels, right? I mean, you're talking about, we've been talking a lot about Warning and using Isaac Hayes. And of course, Isaac Hayes, you know, rises to prominence and success in the 70s because of all of his blaxploitation work. And so you're getting those kind of vibes. And so there's not a lot of songs on here that I think are sparsely produced. It's very lush in a lot of ways. I mean, you still have that kind of menacing boom bap staccato feel, but the production, the way it swells on so many songs, even a song like Me and My Bitch, like there's just a lot going on
in
the music
one.
Itself.
Moonlight strolls with the hoes, oh no, that's not my steelo. I want a bitch that like to play CeeLo and craps, back and gats, in a coach bag, steaming dime bags. A real bitch is all I want, all I ever had. With a rock just as strong as me, toting guns just as long as me. The bitch belongs with me.
Oh no, that ain't my steelo. I love it.
Right.
Sorry, my bad.
Oh no, no, it's all, no, go in, you know? I mean, you got the strings, you got those drums. You know, we mentioned Big Papa earlier, which is obviously this Izzy Brothers sample that a lot of other people had already used by this point in 94. Mm. But yet in Biggie's hands, you feel like you're just kind of hearing it for the first time. And there is, I mean, you know, sampling from the Izzy Brothers in general, I mean, you're going to get lushness. You're going to get a lot of big, big time production. And so I think, you know, one of the things that makes this album work, yes, there's the storytelling, but the storytelling needs a score, and that team of producers that we're talking about provides that score to, again, make this album and make Biggie sound as cinematic as possible. And I think that really is one of the kind of enduring legacies of Ready to Die, is just how you feel listening to it. Coming to the crib, even had a set of keys. During the day, you helped me bag up my nickels. In the process, I admit I tricked a little, but you was my bitch, the one that never snitched. Tell me when I'm broke or when I'm filthy fucking rich. And I admit... We will be back with more of our conversation with Patrick Page about Ready to Die, after a brief word from some of our sibling Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
Hi, I'm Joe Firestone.
And I'm Manolo Moreno.
And we host After Game Show, a podcast where listeners submit games and we play them regardless of quality with a dozen listeners from around the world.
We've had folks call in from as far as Sweden, South Africa, and the Philippines.
Here's an example. This is a game we called Zooey Deschanel, where you turn a celebrity's name into an animal pun. You have an example, Manolo?
Brad Gorilla Pit.
Oh, that's a pun on gorilla pits?
Yep.
I don't know.
That's Brad Pitt.
Oh, okay.
That's a high-quality game that you could expect.
Dr. Game Show has new episodes every other Wednesday on Maximum Fun.
Check us out, please.
Hey, I'm Janet Varney, host of the JV Club podcast. Ah, high school. Was it a time of adventure, romance, and discovery?
Class of 95! We did it!
Or a time of angst, disappointment, and confusion?
We're all tied together by 4 years of trauma at this place, but enjoy adulthood, I guess.
The truth is, it was both. So join me on the JV Club podcast, where I invite some great friends like Kristen Bell, Angela Kinsey, Oscar Nunez, Neil Patrick Harris, and Keegan Michael Key to talk about high school, the good, the bad, and everything in between.
My teenage mood swings are getting harder to manage.
The JV Club. Find it on Maximum Fun.
Yo, and we're back on Heat Rocks talking Ready to Die with our guest, Patrick Page.
So this to me is one of the great what if questions that I think about more often than I probably should, which is that if Biggie had not died, right, in 97, where do we think his career could have or would have gone? And Morgan, let's have you start this one off.
This is a tough question for me because I'm stuck squarely in 1997. And I think to your point earlier, the fact that he had two albums, only two albums, helps to build this legend. And I'm stuck with that legend, the legend of Ready to Die and Life After Death. I wonder what the implications would have meant for the rest of Bad Boy after. What would have happened with Mace? What would have happened with the rest of them? Black Rob and Sean, would there have even been? Where would Bad Boy have gone? How would he have adapted to the changes? How would he have sounded in the shiny suit era? Would there have been a shiny suit era? So I have all these questions, but no real answers. I don't know where he would have been because I'm so stuck in 97. I'd like to think he would have continued to be great, but the industry went through some changes, as we know, and they never looked back. The late 90s marked a clear change in direction for hip hop, and I just wondered how he would have been able to ride the tide on that.
You know, I'm not saying this to be remotely disrespectful or cynical, but when I've had debates over the years about sort of where Biggie belongs in the pantheon of great rappers, the point that I oftentimes try to make is that his career never lasted long enough for him to fall off. And very few 90s rappers in particular were really ever, I think, to stay relevant into the 2000s. I mean, you can really count them on you know, maybe one or two hands at most. You got Snoop, certainly. Outkast was able to do it. Jay-Z was able to do it. But to me, these are the exceptions rather than the rule. Patrick, what do you think?
I'm going to be completely honest. I've actually had this conversation with a few friends. We've talked about the whole Biggie Tupac, where they would be today.
Yeah.
And the sad reality, and I don't want to get in trouble for saying this, is we have to face the possibility. I'm not going to say that they would have, but we have to be comfortable with the possibility that they might have fallen off by this time.
Yeah.
Just for the simple fact that you said, like, you guys hit it on the head about how well they'd be able to transition, like, how well they'd be able to adapt. How well they'd be able to adapt and how well they, or even whether or not they'd want to adapt.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, who's to say whether or not he would want to change? Who's to say whether or not he would have quit music and been like, you know what, I'm straight with these two albums. But like you said, we'll never know.
Yeah.
Really. But I think we have to be okay with the possibility and have the honest and hard conversation about whether or not, like you said, he would have made that transition easy or not, you know?
I seen the light excite all the freaks. Stack mad chips, spread love with my peeps. Niggas wanna creep, got to watch my back. Think the cognac and endo sack make me slack. I switches all that, cocksucker G's up. One force move, get Swiss cheese up.
Well, bringing this back to 94, let's get back to Ready to Die. And Patrick, what is the fire track off of Ready to Die for you?
Like I said, I think, and it's not even like my absolute favorite, but I just remember it starting off the album. Things Done Changed was probably the one. Like, even like how the beat came in. I never figured I had a Mac computer, the one you just plug in the wall, like with nothing else. And I was doing homework. I think I was doing math homework. Okay, I think my computer was green. And it was my first time listening to that. And that song came on, I was like, damn, this beat's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was just like literally him just catching you up. It was like walking down the street, which I used to do. And you talk to the homies like, yo, here's what's going on. Don't go over there because of this. Like I said, like, I'm gonna take you over here. Literally felt like you just walked with him to the corner store, maybe the bodega. You just seen like 30 different things happening between the trip. Like, you know what I'm saying? Hoping you get back with all your shit, like, you know, back to the crib, but everything intact. Like, you know, you might want to tuck your necklace. You know what I'm saying? But he made it sound fun. Like, he made it sound dope. And the way he was spitting, like, so I love the intro, but yeah. I don't know. Machine Gun Funk's still one of my favorites, though. Machine Gun Funk's still one of my favorites, though.
I mean, just the opening. So you want to be hardcore with your hat to the back. Talk about the gats of your raps. But I can't feel that hardcore feel that you... This ain't Christopher Williams. Come on.
I could rap the whole fucking verse.
Same.
Clearly.
So you want to be hardcore with your hat to the back. Talking about the gats in your raps. But I can't feel that hardcore appeal that you're screaming.
I'm dreaming. This ain't Christopher Williams, still some empty. Got the feel one, cats, I got the feel some. To let niggas know that if you fuck with big and heavy, I get up in that ass like a wedgie. Says who says
me? I mean, I still definitely bump Machine Gun Funk. I still love Give Me the Loot. But if I have to just distill this album down to one fire track, it comes back to Unbelievable. And I think somewhere in alternative universe, Primo would have just done the entire album like he did for J. Rue or did for Group Home. And if you think about how good Premier's production was in 94, pairing him with Biggie, I think would have been the greatest Strictly for the Heads album in hip hop history. I'm very happy with the album that we got, but I do like imagining, what if you just get these two Brooklyn cats together and you put them in the studio for a few months and see what would have turned out? That probably would have been a pretty good album too. Would have been very different than Ready to Die, but it would have been pretty good.
Buckshots out the sunroof, Alexis coupes, leave no witnesses. What you think this is? Ain't no amateurs here. I damage and tear. MCs fear me. They too near not to hear me. Clearly, I'm the triple beam dream. 1,000 grams of uncut to the gut. It seems fucked up the way I touched up the grill trying to play gorilla.
Morgan, how about you? What's your fire track off of here?
I love, 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 love Machine Gun Funk. Mm. Love it. Because I love Chief Rocka. It's one of my favorite songs of the decade. It still comes back for me also to Unbelievable. Bar for bar, Unbelievable is a scorcher. Yeah. It's such it's just a scorcher. The only way to show how nice you are is to show how nice you are. And he does that times a trillion on that song. I mean, at the moment he says, live from Bedford-Stuyvesant, the livest one, representing BK to the fullest, that's it. He's gone. He takes off. It is just, it's such a flashy way to show off your bars.
Live from Bedford-Stuyvesant, the livest one, representing BK to the fullest. Gats are bullet, bastards ducking when Big B bucking. Chicken heads be clucking in my back room fucking. It ain't nothing. They know Big B handling with the Mac in the actor.
I got to share this real quick, is that a couple of years ago, they released this album. They released Ready to Die as a 7-inch album. So in other words, they took the whole album, chopped it into a bunch of 45s, and then released that as a box set. And even though I have this album in a few different forms, and like, is there ever going to be time when I'm really going to want to spin out Things Done Changed off a 7-inch? Probably not. But even though Bad Boy did release a couple of these songs, Big Papa was on a 7-inch originally back in 94. The What was on a 7-inch back in that time. They didn't release the entire album like that. And I got to say, I think I ponied up and bought the box set mostly just to have Unbelievable and Juicy on 7-inch, because it never existed on that format. And like I said, I may not necessarily need the rest of the album in that format, but just to have Unbelievable on 45, like, that was worth the purchase price of the box set for me, at least. That's how much I love that song.
B-I-G-G-I-E, a.k.a. B-I-G, get it? Biggie, also known as the Bon Appetit. Rappers can't sleep, need sleeping. Big keep creeping, bullets heat sinking. Casualties need treating, dumb rappers need teaching. Lesson A.
So before I get to your favorite moment, just a question that I have to ask, because Patrick, you and I are both fans. We both rapping, you know, word for word. What's your favorite song, just for bars, verses, and what's your favorite line? Because he's the king of one-liners and metaphors. Any favorites?
To all the ladies in the place with style and grace, allow me to lace these lyrical douches in your bushes. I was like, yo, that's fucking stupid. Like, that's one of my favorite Biggie Smalls lines ever.
Yeah. Now, to all the ladies in the place with style and grace, allow me to lace these lyrical douches in your bushes. Who rock grooves and make moves with all the mommies.
And it was clever as fuck. It was just like, how do you say that?
Exactly.
How did you come up with that? Allow me to lace these lyrical douches in your butt. I was like, okay, bet. All right, that's probably what I know. That's a really wild ass line to love.
Yeah,
but that's probably one of my favorites.
I mean, for me, I don't know if this would be like the best, but I do think the What is just a fantastic showcase for Method Man and for Biggie. And given that I mean, it's the only song on here where there's another rapper involved, you know, aside from Give Me the Loot and My Confusion, that is the same person. But I mean, it's the only true duet on here. And I mean, like 94, Method Man is the biggest act out of the Wu camp at this point. And he's duetting with Biggie. I mean, talk about like just a powerhouse pairing right there.
I want the fucking fortune like the wind. I squeeze gas till my clips is empty. Don't tempt me.
D-H-O-D, you don't want the fuck. Here I am, I'll be damned if this ain't some shit. Time to spread the bud, deliver it over harmony grit. It's the mood killer death trap. Yes, I'm a jet black ninja.
Come, I think my favorite verse comes from Unbelievable. And it's just his confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's when he says, my forte causes Caucasians to say,
he sounds demented, call we sent it. If I said it, I meant it. Bite my tongue for no one. Call me evil or unbelievable.
It's just like drop the mic on that one. Just so clever. So that would be my favorite. One of my favorite bars. There's so many. I can't, but that's at the top for me. So favorite moments. Let's get into those. My favorite moment comes at the end of Respect. When Diana King gets in her bag, because I love the nod to his Jamaican roots. I love Diana King's vocal. And to me, it was a great way to close. That song is just so rugged and gully.
Notice this is Diana King doing a young thing in a big small swing. Do it, child. Have mercy. The gunman in a party. And everybody feel angry. And everybody just follow me, follow me, follow me.
I just love that part. It's the only like legit vocal on there besides his and besides some of the samples. And I just love it's got a little gulliness that I really like, and I love how he closes. I love how he closes that out. What about you, Patrick?
My favorite moment, and this is so dark. Like I said, I was very emo in high school and shit like that. So my favorite moment, or one of the most memorable moments, it was so goddamn sad, but I was like, wow, that was total fucking beautiful, was being my bitch when his fucking girlfriend ends up getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like pushing past the police, like, what the fuck happened? And then he goes to find out, like, yo, like, I just lost the love of my life. Like, he says, you killed my best friend. Like, I felt that in my heart. I was like, oh my God, his best friend. Like, that was actually really sad, but to me, that was, like, one of the most memorable moments because that was, like, ironically, one of my favorite stories he told, even though it had, like, this tragic ending. It was still, like, a beautiful story, and I'm, like, not hurt. Like I said, I'm 15, 14 listening to this shit. So I'm not, like, hurt. I'm not hurt, and I still go back and listen to it, like, to this day every so often, but I've, like, not heard a story told like that.
It didn't take long before the tears start. I saw my bitch dead with the gunshot to the heart. And I know it was meant for me. I guess the niggas felt they had to kill the closest one to me. And when I find them, their life is to an end. They killed my best friend. Me and my bitch.
I appreciated this story. I was able to appreciate this story. And I, like, always wanted that kind of, can't believe I must say this, I always wanted that, like, kind of love, like that kind of Bonnie and Clyde situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, without the ending, though. Like,
right.
I mean, Patrick, what you're saying makes me think that what works about that song, and maybe why it has lingered with you all these years, is that it's not, I mean, there are a lot of, to your point, right, a lot of rappers have done, you know, a song about my ride or die bitch, right? That's not anything particularly new. I think the difference with Me and My Bitch, though, emotionally, it feels real. I mean, you know it's a story. You know that it's probably not from real life, but it feels real. Like, he is able to convince you of that emotion, of the grief that he's feeling in that moment, pushing past the police. And maybe this goes back to what Morgan was saying about just his quality as a storyteller. Is a good storyteller, you don't stop to question, is this real or not? You just get taken in by the story itself. And I think for these exact reasons, my favorite moment on the song is the opening verse on Juicy.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock.
It didn't even dawn on me until prepping for today, is that 1994, I think, gave us two of the greatest autobiographical rap songs of all time. And they're both about growing up, or at least moving to Brooklyn, right? It's about Juicy, and it's about Gangstar's The Planet. And I think partly why I love both of those songs so much it's not just that they tell, like, this is how I got started, right? It's the specificity of what it was like to be a rap fan in the era. So it wasn't about their careers. I mean, yes, both songs are about their careers, but both songs begin with Guru and Biggie just talking about what was it like to be in love with hip hop and to have these ambitions and to dream.
With the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? Da-ha, you never thought that hip hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight because I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade.
I think a song like Juicy brought Biggie down to our level as listeners because we could identify with him about his love affair with hip hop. Even if we didn't have his talent to join the ranks of the artists that he looked up to, we could identify with reading Word Up magazine. We could identify with listening to Marley Marl or listening to Red Alert or whoever else, because that was our experience with hip hop. It's like, oh shit, like Biggie was doing the same thing that we were doing as well. That's my favorite moment right there.
So, if you had to introduce someone to this album and to Biggie who'd never heard it before, what's the song you'd have them listen to first?
I'm going to honestly tell them to start from beginning to end because how, like we said, how cinematically this album was put together, how cohesive it is. I'm not going to start them from, like, I feel like you'd be doing the album injustice to start them anywhere but the beginning. Because of how the, like we talked about, how cohesive the production was, the arrangements, the intros, even to the outro. But yeah, no, I'm not gonna start it anywhere other than the beginning, like front to back. Like this album for me is like a, even the songs that I skip, front to back, like cohesively, this entire project you have to listen to. Cause that's how I digested it. That's how I digest a lot of albums. Like some albums today, like certain albums that will come out in today's rap and shit like that, you can skip through, you know what I'm saying? Because it won't be like so intentionally put together, like song for song, like with these, even with the little interludes in between, some still do that. But yeah, I'm not starting nobody other than like the intro to the end. I feel like you have to like, it's like a book for me.
Yeah. If you had to describe Ready to Die in 3 words, what would they be?
Damn, I'm gonna say a story, I'm gonna say bars, and I wanna say, what's the third word I wanna say for this album? I don't wanna say intentional, I feel like that's too cliche, but it was intentional about how he approached every song and how he's rapping out his flow. For me, I'm gonna say cadence. I'm gonna say story, I'm gonna say bars, and I'm gonna say cadence.
It's type simple and plain to maintain. I add a little funk to the brain, the funk, baby.
Well, before we jump out of here, we always want to leave our audience with something dope to step to. So we have some recommendations for what you should check out after you listen to Ready to Die. Morgan, why don't you start us off?
I would say track down a beat maker named 1-2 on Bandcamp and grab his The Fat EP. It's 1-2 and Biggie. And start with his take on Juicy and keep going. It's beautiful. 1-2 is spelled W-U-N and T-W-O. Buy the whole thing, but start with Juicy.
Condos and queens, in dope for weeks. Sold out seats to hear Biggie Small speak. Live a life without fear. Put 5 carats in my baby girl ear. Lunches, brunches, interviews by the pool. Considered a fool because I dropped out.
I would suggest check out Craig Mack's Project Funk the World, which was Bad Boy's other big album from 94. It came out just a week after Ready to Die came out, which I feel like was unfair. Like they should have spaced it out a little bit more, because despite the fact that Craig Mack had that huge hit, of course, with Flavor in Your Ear, he would just be completely overshadowed by Biggie's success, and his career really faded in a lot of ways. But I mean, to end on a positive note with this, I think Project Funk the World was a very, very solid listen. It includes a lot of Easy Mo B, who clearly was doing a lot of work with Bad Boy at the time. So he's all over this album as well. And Easy Mo B produces my favorite song off the LP, which is When God Comes.
When you're disappearing, it's my fault. Cause it's time to put all the madness to a flying home. And radio needs to be ashamed of bumping murder, murder, murder all up in our brain. I tell you
you now, Big Papa don't like it. Represent the truth when the Mac starts to mic it.
Patrick, take us out of here. What would you recommend our audience check out after they're done with Ready to Die?
I talk about Midnight Marauder so much, but I'm going to tell people to go listen to Beast Rhymes and Life.
We were just talking about how that album, I think, has aged so much better than I think a lot of people felt back in 96.
Yeah, because I heard when it came out, like a bunch of people weren't fucking with it. Like I said, I'm getting these albums in the early 2000s as a teenager.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm digesting these later. I'm like, yo, these are fucking incredible. Like, even, like, the very first, like I said, I'm obsessed with jazz and shit. So the very first song where Phony Rappers comes on with those them crazy-ass chords, I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then Phony Rappers, who do not write. Of course, I love everything. That's one of my favorite Five Dog verses ever. I think I spit that whole verse to my band the day he died because I was sad. Like, we were leaving some hotel. I'll never forget. We were in Italy. And I literally was just like, man, this is fucking me up. And I just started rapping that whole Five Dog verse. But yeah, I'm going to say Beast Rhymes in Life.
Yes, Quincy over. His rhyme style is older than a Chrysler Cordoba. I'm wilder than the guys from Arizona. Villanova, Kentucky. Who's the next MC stepping up to try and bust me? Bring him here. And boy, will I ever let him have it.
And when it comes to the microphone, don't even try to grab it.
What?
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Patrick Page. His new album just came out, If I Fail, Are We Still Cool? Let us know what else you're working on now, and where can people find you in these socials?
You can find me, I don't got no fancy names or spelling, nothing like that. It's just Patrick Page, P-A-I-G-E-I-I, Patrick Page II. That's all my socials, my Twitter, that's my Instagram. That's pretty much everything I'm on. Right now, I'm working on the EP. It's pretty much, it was about 90% done, but I'm going back to rewrite the thing. So just pushing this album and going back to go write and re-record some stuff. Sharpen the bars. Like, this conversation is definitely, it's inspired me. I'm like, okay, cool. All right, I've really come with it now.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.